space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html there. You get three chat rooms over there. I posted some idea links inside the chat room there. Starting off with, if you scroll up to the top, Russ at RWG Research is doing this Pulse Motor Build Off 2017. They've been doing this every year for a while. And if you get an opportunity to become involved in this deal, I suggest you give it a shot. It might be something, yeah, might be something interesting for you to do. The pulse motor videos that I posted inside there are little examples of what a pulse motor actually is. And so it's a really simple concept of how to actually make a motor that ends up being, depending on how you design it, really efficient. There's a video out there. You see, I think Lid Motors done them, and doggone it, what's his name? Let me scroll down. I got a link in the channel there. Hate it when that happens. Let's see here. TeslaMaker.com. Ad burn it. It'll come to my brain when I'm not thinking about it. Anyway, there's a motor out there that they did called an Easy Spin motor. And some of them they have running off of capacitors and really low voltages and microamps and stuff, really super efficient, and some of which they've had running for a long time. And doggone, I still can't remember what the name of that guy was. Lid Motor gets a lot of his ideas from him. Either way, I'm having a brain deal right now. I don't know what's going on. But out there on YouTube, just Google up Easy Spin Motor. That'd be easier than me trying to remember what the heck it is I was trying to say. Super efficient motors. Low friction. I also posted the video in there. Ludic Science is another one of them. And he has a really simple explanation of how a pulse motor works and how efficient they are. Between Lid Motor and Ludic Science, and the one I can't remember his name right now, they have some really super efficient motor designs going on, low friction and such. And also Sky Collection out there, he does a lot of pancake coil design motors, and he's got a lot of super efficient motors as well. So if any one of them comes across a concept such as a super efficient motor that can run for quite some time, at the very least, on very, very low voltages, one of them, I'm sure, has either already stumbled on to what they say is not possible, such as a perpetual motion device. Perpetual motion is kind of a misnomer. It's basically a way to say that it's not possible, because the losses in systems and such, and the laws of physics and thermodynamics and whatever, you know, there's so many excuses why things can't run under their own power. And to me, it's not that big of a deal whether it's running on an outside power. What is a big deal is whether or not it's running efficiently. So I don't care if it's got a solar panel that it's using part of the day and charging up the system and then running through the night. Nonetheless, if that thing continues to run on the energy that is all around us, then in my mind, if that thing runs for 100 years, as far as I'm concerned, it's perpetual motion. I don't care what the physical definition of perpetual motion is. If something, if you get this thing started with sunlight and it continues to run and then runs into the night and then during the winter time, and you have other sources that are coming in that are basically wind power, thermoelectrics of any kind, something that is using any waste energy, radiant energy, or even radio wave technology, it doesn't matter to me personally. As far as I'm concerned, it's perpetual motion. It continues to go. See, perpetual motion and over unity and zero point energy, I don't like those terminologies, because essentially they're brick walls against anything that you want to try to do to produce what I call free energy, which is the energy that's all around us at any given time. There's energy coming from every different direction. There's radio waves, there's static electric energy, there's solar, wind power, hydroelectrics, thermoelectrics, you name it. All the different possibilities for energy that can be either stored or utilized real time. These motors right here, Lid Motor had what they call a jewel thief circuit on one of these. And it was running on really super low batteries. Batteries that wouldn't run anything else. But the point is, it was getting the most efficiency out of what would have otherwise been classified as a dead battery. The battery shouldn't have been, you know, able to do anything. But there's still energy available in that battery. And so I posted two pictures that I put an idea together, pulse motor idea, and I even put on the top of this pulse motor idea, will it work? And essentially what is going on there, normally if you got a generator, you're spinning the magnets past the coils and you're inducing a current inside the coils, which ends up being an AC current, and then you have to rectify that AC current if you want to use it as DC current. And so what I've done here in this picture is, instead of spinning the magnets, I'm going to spin the coils across the magnet. So all you have to have is those lines of flux that are crossing those coils. And the best thing about the magnet is, no matter how many times you spin that coil across that magnet, you're never going to drain that magnet down. So it's an unlimited power source as far as I'm concerned, because I look at it differently than other people. You know, you want to use mechanical energy to actually spin the magnet past the coils of wire, which when you talked about making an electric motor generator, then you got other forces in there that will affect whether or not other forces and losses that will affect whether or not this thing can continue to go when it's under a load. And so essentially what I got going on here is when the first coil crosses the magnetic flux lines of each magnet, it sends its power through the bridge rectifier to the opposite side of a reverse coil that in turn will pulse a DC pulse and repel the magnet on the opposite side of the rotor. Of course, in this particular drawing, I only have two sets of this, which in a better design would probably have four of each set and potentially an exact replica of the one with four that is has a mirrored effect where there's an AC and a DC pulse on both sides. Now, a lot of people will say that this isn't possible because of magnetic repulsion or whatever, and attraction when it gets to a certain side, it'll just it hasn't been tried. So it needs to be tried. I'm going to make an attempt to build this particular design. Also, I posted a second picture that looks like I got a little blooper down at the bottom, but nonetheless, in this particular, the second one, it also has a capacitor involved in the situation, and a resistor and a diode, so that every time that AC pulse goes through the DC rectifier, that it lights up charges up a capacitor and lights up a little LED, and then pulses the coil after that. So that'd give you some sort of visual of when that light's actually coming on. And this is something that it may have to be modified to at some point discharge that coil, or make sure that it's timed out to turn on a certain time or whatever. And things that could be used for you know, the modifications would be like Hall effect sensors or even reed switches that work off of a magnetic field. Normally open or normally closed reed switches, whichever works best for turning that the DC output side on and off. So at this stage in the game, it's just an idea. Just like a lot of different concepts out there, an idea is only as good as you're willing to take it. This particular design right here would require no battery input. It would be using that, once you spun that thing, it would start charging up the capacitor just like it would for one of those shake-up flashlights that you see. And the faster it would get, the the higher the voltage would go, and so on and so forth. And the question is, would it work? It's potentially, my belief is that if you find a self-powering system, that it's going to be something ridiculously simple, a concept so ridiculously simple. You know, if you have two magnets, and you bring those two magnets in to any general vicinity of each other, they're going to have an instantaneous reaction depending on which way the poles are facing. If they're facing, the same poles are facing each other, it's going to cause the one magnet to flip over and then suddenly attract the opposite side to the magnet, and those two magnets will slap together. And so that's one of the reasons why they believe that it's possible to actually build a permanent magnet motor that has no electrical input, that you just utilize that force of attraction and repulsion. And they tried all kinds of different types of configurations in order to try to do that. Well, in the process of trying to do that, that's where the problem of when it gets to a certain point, it either tries to pull itself back the other direction, attract, or whatever. And so most of the designs that you see out there, they won't work. Or if they do spin, once you get it spinning, eventually that cogging effect will slow it down enough to where, you know, it'll come to a complete stop. Now, there are some designs out there that look pretty doggone convincing that they do work, but you could never get there's some individuals out there trying to scam people, and you can never get nobody to be able to go and measure these and see, you know, for themselves how they're working and that kind of stuff, because you know they're wanting to either sell their design or they're wanting to either hide something that is a flaw to the system or whatever. For whatever reason, they don't really want you to see inside of their magic machine, so to speak. Now, this one, the way that I see it mechanically, it doesn't violate any of the laws of physics. All it is when the coil on the one side produces an AC pulse, that AC pulse goes through the bridge rectifier straight across to a coil that could either be reversed for polarity or maybe even the same exact polarity as the other side. And then as it's going through, pulsing and repelling the magnet on the opposite side, then it has a capacitor and an LED where you can get start to store charge in that capacitor, light up the LED, and then you can actually see that there's something going on other than the actual motion of it spinning around in circles. So it was just an idea, like I said. And ideas, once again, are only as good as far as people are willing to take it. Well, the moment I come up with the idea, I drew up the diagram, I put it out there on the table for everyone to laser saber. Thanks, Steven. That's the one I'm thinking about. Laser saber, lid motor, Ludic Science, Russ from RWG Research are just a few of the ones that make these pulse motors and stuff. And if you get an opportunity to go and join into on this contest, especially if you own a YouTube channel, Russ said that he's going to post the videos on his channel, which will help support your channel because, you know, if people like the work you've done, then they'll want to come over and subscribe to you, and you'll get more subscribers that way and such. And so he said that in the video, he said that there's no prizes per se, that everybody's a winner, just you just try it. Well, that I like that. I like what Russ has done because, you know, this is the only way that any of this stuff will ever get out there to the general public is when people try to replicate these ideas. And that was my whole point for this whole entire deal, was that take a look at this diagram that I put out there. It says Shazoo's pulse motor on there. There's two separate pictures, one that shows a circuit with just the rectifier and two coils, and the other one shows a circuit with two coils, a rectifier, a capacitor, a resistor, and an LED, so that you can see if this thing is charging the capacitor, lighting up the LED, plus pulsing the opposite side over there. And if you build it exactly like this diagram right here, and for some reason it doesn't function like that, find out why it doesn't function like that. Because let's say I was talking to my friend Thomas the other day, and he was trying to ask me, wouldn't the coils on the other side be trying to make an AC pulse, which would basically reverse the pulse that you wanted to do, or stop the effect or whatever. And so I'm thinking, well, you know, that could be a potential. But if it is, then maybe I can, in the rotor design itself, I could put in a switch that, as it was passing the magnet, would break the circuit until a certain point, and then turn the switch back on as the DC pulse would come through and actually repel the deal. So there's all kinds of different possible solutions. And if you try an idea and for some reason it doesn't work, then don't give up on the idea itself, because there are forces at work already. We know that when we pass a coil of wire across a magnetic flux line from north to south or whatever, that it produces, it induces a current in that coil. The folks that designed these shake-up flashlights, they figured that out, and they monopolized on it. See, this thing isn't going to sit there and charge itself. You actually have to use a outside force and shake the battery, or shake the magnet through in and out of the coil of wire until it charges up enough. But nonetheless, the faster you shake that thing up, the faster it charges up. And so the same concept would apply. This is if you ever seen inside of these doggone flashlights, it's an air core coil. There's no transformer core in there, laminates or doggone it, what do they call that other stuff? Ferrite cores. There's no ferrite cores and there's no laminate cores in there. It's just an air core coil. And so this particular idea right here would be the equivalence of that. It would have no air core, or it would be an air core coil, wouldn't have no ferrite or laminates in there. Now, however, if for some reason you're not getting a strong enough pulse, it wouldn't be no problem to modify it to actually put a ferrite core in there or a laminate core to get a stronger pulse out of it. And you could do that on both sides as well. So just because it doesn't work in one configuration, don't give up on the possibility that you could solve that one issue that was occurring, whatever it might be. You could put this thing together and it may just work right out of the gate, which would be the best case scenario and be really awesome, because now you'd essentially have an electric motor that would not require any electrical input, as far as an outside force, because it's actually utilizing that magnetic field to produce its own onboard power, if you understand what I'm trying to say. The pulse motors, some of the pulse motors are utilizing an outside force that is putting juice to the battery and causing it to pulse, but some of the one designs that I've seen these guys work with have actually put power back into the system to make it run longer, charging up a capacitor or something. And transistors introduced in the circuit are beneficial as well, because if you're charging up these systems and you're trying to release this power at a certain time, a transistor essentially acts like a switch. Until the power gets up to a certain point, it won't allow current to flow through that transistor, and then, you know, you can pretty much time it out where you want to pulse. And the Hall effect sensors that detect the magnetic field and the reed switches, which is essentially a version of a Hall effect sensor, but it's not. It's more of a mechanical switch. When the magnet comes close to it, it sucks the two pieces of wire together and completes the circuit and lets the power flow through. So there's all kinds of potentials going on there. And like I said, Ludic Science, Lid Motor, Laser Saber, Russ from RWG Research, those are just only a few of the people out there who are doing research in that kind of work. And also, I posted down there just for fun, there's a video where a guy took a Raspberry Pi. He says you can build a homemade laptop for under $100, which is pretty cool. And it'd be nice. You could probably even 3D print your case and all that kind of stuff for this particular deal. So I posted that there because it's an idea. Just another idea. And like, ideas are what makes a thing makes things happen. You know, somebody gets an idea, they share the idea with them, and there's a lot of times a lot of ideas go by the wayside because people will start picking your idea apart every time you put an idea on the table. They'll try to find out reasons why it won't work. Or the famous one that, well, you know, if that could be done, they'd already be doing it and stuff like that. No, they wouldn't already be doing it. You get a motor that would require no electrical input from a power source on the outside, and the essentially the magnet is where it's actually getting its power from as the motion of the first spin goes across there, and then once you spun this thing up and it can continue to repeat the process, and now you'd have the equivalence of a motor that required no outside power input directly other than the magnetic field as it's crossing across there. The implications of what you could do with that would be mind-blowing. And so when I heard Russ talk about the pulse motor build-off, that's was the first idea that, you know, came to mind, because I had thought of this idea prior, that if you could induce a field across a motor that would repel on the other side because of the direction of that current flowing, you could change the polarity of the coil if you had to, just by reversing the coil around in the opposite direction. And so you could set this thing up to be both opposite sides on there, and the action of the first coil passing through the lines of flux of the magnet would send that power directly across, and on the opposite side would repel away from the magnet. So either way, there it is, folks. There's an idea set on the table that if it ever was to be tried out and worked, it would be really cool for all of humanity as far as I'm concerned. So, talked about these pulse motors. There's a couple different versions of how they're actually doing these pulse motors, some of which, like Ludic Science, is the very basic one that shows a really simple design, and Laser Saber shows a really super simple design. It only requires one transistor and a capacitor, and Ludic Science is doing pretty much the same thing. You got a battery, you got a coil, and you got a reed switch. And then he has where he's using a pin that has a magnet on the top and a magnet on the bottom, and his rotor basically spins around on that. That particular design is based off of like Ludic or Lid Motor and Laser Saber's Easy Spin designs. If you haven't seen the Easy Spin motor, I'm going to have to look that up and see if I can get a link, pop that in there. Some of the ones that they did, they are brilliant. Let's see, I'm going to try to type this in here. See if I can't come up with a link to post in there. There it is. And I'm not sure if Lid Motor sells them things yet, but he 3D prints the parts. Laser Saber, yep, that's the one that has it. Anyway, he's actually got one 3D printed nuclear powered Tri-Nano Easy Spin, where he's using, what the heck did they call that? I'll just post the link. I'm going to put that one in there, but that'll give you a general idea what the Easy Spin motor is. Tritium, that's what he used. Anyway, he took tritium and some solar panels and used the tritium to actually use the glow that it makes to produce enough power to turn this Easy Spin motor. Boy, that's obnoxious. Those doggone commercials on YouTube, they just like, they'll drive you nuts. Okay, so I'm going to post this particular one in the chat room there. There. The nuclear powered one. Anyway, he's got a bunch of different versions of there. From what I understand, he's got a couple of these motors that he's put together that have been running for a ridiculous amount of time. I think that somebody down the line said there was one out there that had been running for at least 2 years. 2 years off of one power source, pretty doggone good if you ask me. But nonetheless, there you go, folks. Go on to YouTube and Google up Easy Spin Motor, and you'll come across a bunch of different links, 3D printed, people making replications of them. And they basically try to get these things to run for as long as possible on everything from crystal battery cells to, you know, any earth battery technology or solar, wind, anything. But the whole concept is to run on the least amount of input power possible. Now keep in mind, on the scale of these, you're not really going to get any work done, but that's not the point. The point is the longevity. The point is to see how long you can get these things to run. And they use jewel thief circuits, which will, you know, basically use every bit of energy down in the battery down to its lowest possible potential until that battery is completely flat. This thing will keep spinning. And some of them have actually taken these same little motors and made Easy Spin motor generators. So that as that little magnets are spinning around past other coils, some of them are doing the pulsing and other ones are basically picking up that power on the other side. So this design of what I showed, the pulse motor idea, this could be a potential to add this idea to the Easy Spin idea and try to get even more efficiency or longevity, for the very least, out of this deal, and get this thing to spin for longer periods of time, or maybe even indefinitely, best case scenario. I honestly believe it can be done, because all we're doing is literally trying to move energy from one point to the next with as few losses as possible, and the whole concept of energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does that energy go? Well, you just move it from one point to the next point, and at some point the losses become a different form of energy, like as in heat. You know, when you're driving a gasoline engine and you're generating all that heat, and that heat is dispersed into the atmosphere, it's still energy. It's still usable, storable energy. And so, by reducing the friction, you reduce any heat losses that you would have got from these designs. And make it really efficient. Some of these, there's one out there that I hadn't seen before, but they're using these 3D printers and making, like the lid motor's got a coil with eyeballs on it that he calls Maggie, and while his pulse motors are going by, they're actually sending a pulse out and charging up the eyeballs inside of this one he calls Maggie. And apparently some other folks out there took that idea a little bit further and made, let me see, I'll throw a link into this one here. I'll try to mute this before it gets loud on the deal. Let's see. Okay, that's Laser Saber's design, but somebody else did it. Alright, hold on, I'm trying to get through to this deal, see what's going on, maybe somebody out there. The laserhacker.com easy spin motor was a fun to 3D print build. Okay, so you can go on laserhacker.com and you can actually get designs to build this motor if you're interested in it. So I will post that video link as well, which I'm sure you can probably get the same information over there at Laser Saber on YouTube. But just in case, since I'm already here, I'm going to go ahead and post this video, and you can see what I'm seeing as far as they made a nifty little 3D robot looking deal on part of it that I think is working like the version of Maggie that lid motor did. So I'm gonna post that one too. Why is everything gotta be a pain in the neck? Doggone it, that's the wrong one. Alright, I gotta go back and do it. Yes, delete that. No, don't delete all of them. Let me go get it again. Share. Hold on, let me see. Yeah, that was it. Alright, this is really bad for live radio. See, this is why I need Muddy or somebody to show up out here so they can talk while I'm trying to share a link. But the rest of them are probably out sleeping or out slaying dragons or something like that. I guess that's alright. But, you see in this particular one here what I was talking about. Alright, so I actually think that you could scale these up. A lot of people say, well, you know, scalability, you can't, because then you'll have this and that and reasons why they can't do them. Maybe it's going to be too heavy or whatever. But come on, you talk about mathematics all the time. You take that mathematics and you measure out and scale the doggone thing up and make everything to the exact ratio that you would have done on a smaller scale, and I don't see why it wouldn't function properly. So, a larger version of these doggone easy spins, could you actually get them to produce enough electricity to do some actual work? I believe you could. I mean, if you watch the ones with lid motor, when he's got Maggie over there, that the lights are lighting up, so at the very least you got a super efficient generating system that is pulsing a coil on the opposite side that is lighting up, so you're at the very least getting light. Super efficient generator actually producing light. Well, the design that I got right on here, you could just totally exclude the whole separate one like that and have the rotor of this being your source of light. It's like I said, it's just another idea. And if people take these ideas and they run with them and expand on them and come back here and share their ideas, the changes that they made to them, you know, and you know, you could download these pictures and you could put your touch to them, redesign them and find the solution, and that's how this thing could potentially go somewhere. You know, the reason for Mad Science is to bring ideas to the table and see who's going to run with these ideas and make the best out of it, you know. That's why I don't discount other people, even if they're making devices that they believe will work one way, and for some reason they find out in the process of building it that it doesn't work exactly how they wanted it to. But nonetheless, if you could get past one certain deal, then you could make this thing work. You know, there's some folks out there that hide batteries inside of stuff and call it free energy. Even that you can learn from. You can learn how they went through the process of hiding it, and you can learn how whatever forces was going on during the time, and maybe that battery that was hidden in there could be supplemented by an outside force such as solar. And like I said, if that thing keeps running all year long, I don't care. To me, that's good enough. If the sun's shining during the day and you're storing up that energy and utilizing it, doesn't matter to me. It doesn't. See, the whole idea of perpetual motion is that it doesn't have any outside power source. It starts under its own power, which right there could potentially knock off at least 80% of all the designs out there, because you actually have to give it an initial push or something like that. So unless it starts under its own power, generates its own power and continues to go, it can't be classified as perpetual motion. So that to me, perpetual motion is just a way to ensure that any super efficient design such as that Easy Spin would never actually make it to the market, if you understand what I'm trying to say there. And with that said, that's cheating society, as far as I'm concerned, of possibilities that you could expand on to finally get one of those free energy devices that self-run and self-power and so on. Initial force, not necessary. You could actually let this thing just turn the switch on and bam, it does the rest. So like the words perpetual motion, over unity, zero point, you'll get all these brilliantly educated people out there that actually have an argument and say, well, you can never get out more than you put in, blah, blah, blah. And it's just another reason why not to do something. Stephen said, here is a copy of Crocodile Clip Circuit testing software. You can create a test circuit, download it from OneDrive here. Cool. And then you actually try that doggone thing out. That's pretty cool. Let me take a peek at this real quick. It's on OneDrive.com. Alright. I'll have to take a look at it later because my computer ain't wanting to agree with me. I'm going to bookmark it though. Thank you very much for the information. But that would be That would be cool to be able to actually put in all the information, test it out to see if it works. And if anybody's out there listening and you're really good with programs like that, copy that that schematic that I put on there and run it through and let me know what your results were on it. So, the more people out there trying these pulse motors and finding out and sharing their results of things that they, roadblocks that they ran into, or discoveries that they made, ways to time it out so that it turns things on and off when needed in order to make this happen. If anybody ever stumbles onto a free energy device out there, and it's done in this fashion that I'm talking about, where all the average Joes out there have a piece of that puzzle, and they already know it'll work. There's a Sky Collection out there. It's one of my favorite alternative energy researchers. Yeah, he's a Spanish guy, and 9 times out of 10, I have no idea what he's actually saying because I don't speak Spanish, but I'm watching and I'm understanding by what he's doing in this video, and sometimes he puts subtitles in there, which helps out as well. And I understand what's going on mechanically with what he's showing in there. But I'm always saying that if anybody ever stumbles on the free energy device, or even at the very least a super efficient electric motor, it's going to be him. His craftsmanship is amazing. And his videos are quality. You just if you get a chance to go there to check out Sky Collection's work. I posted many links in the chat room over there from Sky Collection, because he does a lot of really cool stuff that I like to watch. And he's redesigning the way that the coil systems are working in motors and stuff, which. Okay, I'm scrolling up to see if I can find one of his links that I posted in there. Anyway, Sky Collection. You'll find him if you're out there looking for him. But his motors are... he uses pancake motors, and he's getting extremely high RPMs out of his designs. He's using... friction reducing style bearing systems on these things. Just really nice work. If you get an opportunity, go over and check him out. Subscribe to his channel if you're interested in alternative energy. He's the one that I believe, if ever stumbles onto, like I said, free energy device, it's going to be him. And lid motor, laser saber, both of those do some really quality, super efficient, and wouldn't surprise me in the least if one of those didn't stumble onto it. But I think they'd probably be less likely to classify it as a free energy device or anything like that. Nonetheless, take those ideas and run with them. See how far you can take them. Take these two pictures and add to the circuit, or take away from the circuit. Just do whatever mechanically works out, and give it a shot. Try to see if you can build a pulse motor for the contest that Russ at RWG Research is doing. And then from that point, you know, look at all the other designs that everybody else is and what they're using to turn these things on and off. Because out of all those ideas, you put all them ideas out there and you step back and look at the big picture, you might just be surprised that you might just find that missing piece of the puzzle that'll make your design so much more efficient. And then all you'd have to do is add that piece of the puzzle to the picture, and there you go. So, between pulse motor ideas, thermoelectric ideas, there was a picture that I posted in further back up in there that basically was a thermal idea using a Peltier element and two water-cooled systems that basically stored heat and cold in the equivalence of a thermos on each side. And that heat and cold, when you took the power off of the Peltier, that was normally, I'll go ahead and repost this link. I'm going to go ahead and click on it, and then I'll repost it down in there. But even if this is a lower voltage out, it shows energy transfer. Let's see, move that back there. All right, I'm going to repost this one here into the chat room. That one there is a simple concept. Even if it's not getting out more, I'm not saying getting out more, even if it's not getting out as much as you put in, for whatever reason, there's some loss where some of that energy escapes into the atmosphere, which, if it's designed right, I don't think that's even a possibility. But if you look at this particular picture, it has a Peltier element sandwiched between two water cooling doggone it, what the heck they call them? Heat sinks. Two water cooled heat sinks. And in this particular diagram, it doesn't show any electric pump, because you're not going to use an electric pump in this process. You're going to use thermal dynamics to actually produce a heat siphon, or even cold on the opposite side. Cold is the absent of heat. And so if there's a temperature difference on one side of that water, then that water will create its own circulation, whether it be hot or cold. It doesn't matter. If there's a temperature difference, it's going to create its own siphon. And so these particular designs right here wouldn't require any electrical pump, so that's not an issue there. The power input to the Peltier element, I believe they run from anywhere from 3 to 12 or more volts on there. And so when you put the power to it, one side of the Peltier element gets hot, the other side gets cold, and that heat and cold energy is transferred to its perspective container in this picture. So you'll see that the hot side, from the hot side of the Peltier element's heating up the water on that side, and the cold side on the opposite side. So this energy that was just transferred into these containers that are insulated so that no outside air could actually change the temperature, and that there's no place for that energy to escape away from, then all you did was take the power from the battery, change it to a completely different form of power, and store that energy, completely different form of energy, into hot and cold. Just another concept out there, another idea that if actually took and expanded on, there would be multiple uses for this as well. There's a, on the chat, not in the chat room, but on the podcast page, let me click on that link too. Do-do-do, open in a new tab. So, why does the doggone computers always think you got to try to update when you're trying to do something? Crazy people. Okay. On the Mad Science Podcast page, there are a few ideas. If you scroll down, all the way back to electric pulse engine that I put a picture up there, and a plasma drive system. These little drawings that I draw up, they're just for idea purposes. There's actually a Slayer exciter circuit, a couple drawings in there for that particular deal, for pulse and high frequency. There are different ideas for hydrogen or whatever. different ideas for static, different ideas for tuning fork generator, and people can pretty much complain about them if they want, you know. It's even got a sound wave energy transfer, and just scroll down and you'll see a bunch of different diagrams there. I think there's one that there is definitely one that Jermaine drew that I posted up there to share with people as well. Hydro heat engine ideas, different engine styles, plasma reactor, and then the two that I just mentioned on there. Those are some that I post up there, you know, as ideas and concepts for, you know, being able to transfer energy. And that's the whole key. It's not over unity. It's not free energy to the extent. It shows you how to move power from one place to the next. It's as simple as that. And so, once you understand how energy travels, and you know how the basic laws of physics are, you know basic science, and you're willing to take any idea possible and see how far that it can go. And even that one idea, maybe it can only go so far. But you also have that one idea, the anomaly that occurs whenever you do a certain action, that you could always fall back on later. The Seebeck effect, as far as thermoelectrics, we know that there's only so far the Seebeck effect will last. Basically, as long as there's a temperature difference between two dissimilar metals, it will produce an electrical current. But once the hot side heats the other side up, once both materials become the same temperature, that effect stops. So this particular idea right here, with the two separate containers, one hot water and one cold water, the Seebeck effect right there, as long as those two sides can never reach the same temperature, then that will still produce electrical power out the other side. That's the key. You keep the temperature difference from both sides of it, and you insulate them from each other so that their energy can't transfer directly to each other. The best form of insulation in between the actual Peltier element, one side can't get the same temperature as the other. And the outside force, which was the two containers that are, you know, keeping that temperature difference going, then the Seebeck effect will continue until both sides reach the same temperature. The attic of your house is one temperature, the basement of your house is another temperature, and as long as those temperatures never meet, as long as the two materials, both ends of those temperatures never reach the same temperature, that effect will continue. So that's one of the things to contemplate on when you're doing thermoelectric. So if these motors, like these little easy spin motors that all these different individuals have been 3D printing and putting together, could literally run off of the temperature difference from the outside of your house to the inside of your house. Now, people are going to do the whole mouthing off thing again about, oh, well, you know, it's not perpetual motion because it has to have the more energy from the outside than it does or whatever, and all the energy you're producing for the inside. Cut me a break. They got those little dancing toys that they put up in the windows, and some of them run off of basic ambient light. There's those little solar panels are so efficient that just the wasted light in your room or whatever is, let me see if Muddy wants in here. I'm just going to add him. I'm not even going to ask him. I'm just going to throw him in the call. And anyway, those little dancing toys like that are impressive to me because if you actually did the mathematics on how much... Hi, Muddy. I can hear your wind in the background. If you actually do the mathematics on how much those little plastic pieces weigh and the efficiency at which these little dancing toys will, you know, they got little flowers and different, I've seen one that's a turkey and they got all kinds of different little dancing toys that you put up in the window and the sunlight or even the light from the room itself will keep these things going. But if you actually went and did the math on it, I think you might just be surprised at the efficiency of these motors being able to utilize other forces such as leverage to be able to keep these things running on small amounts of voltages. So, this is what I'm talking about. These things, I believe you could actually scale them up. You know, if you really want to think about something like Raymond's two-stage oscillator, and you think about how he's using leverage to be able to lift a lot of weight up on the other side, and when you get this thing going, you know, it doesn't take much input force on the one side to do anything. Well, take that same concept and add some hydraulics to it. Water pressure, all you, if you took a just basically start smacking one side of the swimming pool, you know, you'd start to see waves, and then the waves would get stronger and stronger, and at a certain point, if you've got the right frequency going at the same time, just keep on repeating this over and over. You're not putting a lot of force in this side over here, but if you had a heavy person sitting on a raft on the other side of that, eventually they'd start going up and down too because of that hydraulic pressure underneath them in the raft. So just by an obnoxious pushing your wave back and forward down and up inside there, the person on the other side is going on a joyride. Those are things like the two-stage oscillator and these easy spin motors and the thermoelectrics. These are just little ideas of physics and stuff that you can actually get things. I showed in my one of my videos, physics toys, I showed how you could literally use a vacuum to hold air pressure. So when I blew this little jug up, I could pop the lid on this thing shut, and it will hold air pressure inside there. But at the same time, there's a hole on the back of that deal that I can hold that would not allow these two differences to, you know, balance themselves back out. And so I could sit there with the cap wide open, and it would still have air pressure. The balloon would still be blown up until I let my finger off of that hole and release that pressure. These are the things that I keep trying to point out to people, hopefully that they will take these ideas and put all these little pieces of the puzzle together. And, you know, instead of trying to discourage other people and trying to give you all kinds of reasons, I understand there's a lot of smart people out there. Alright, but if you think you're so smart that you've got to try to convince somebody that this idea won't work without physically building it yourself, then you're not only cheating them, you're cheating yourself out of this potential. Because even if it does not work, you're going to learn something from it that is going to be beneficial, and you might actually stumble onto the solution that will make it work. How you doing, Muddy?
Terrible, having a ball.
How's that terrible then?
Terrible. shoot, just working, working and working.
Cool.
Out there, I come down, I'm not even at home today. I'm babysitting a laundromat and thrift shop while the wife and Jim are down there at some auction. So I did the paper route last night with five different papers. So
cool.
I'm just down there. I said, well, shoot, I think I can still get on the show. So I grabbed the wife's computer.
Have you had an opportunity to listen in any a bit?
No, I was outside shoveling all the dirt that washed over from the lot across the street.
Well,
let me
try to...
So I come inside and I put the fan on me and I'm stoked.
Cool. And
I was chilling, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, let me give you a quick rundown. I posted a pulse motor idea in a bunch of different places. You might have seen it, you may not have. But
I was looking at them last night on my phone.
I posted those, and I posted, reposted the Peltier energy transfer system using liquid and stuff like that, liquid heat sinks. And also posted some videos for Russ at RWG Research that is going to be doing a pulse motor build-off, which I think's already started now. But I think he said there's like 4 weeks that you could actually put one in. And I also posted some things from Ludic Science and Laser Saber and Lid Motor about their easy spin motors and their pulse motor ideas. Because this thing that Russ from RWG Research, even though there ain't no prizes to be won, you know, he said everybody's a winner in the deal, and I agree with him, because if you take the time to actually attempt to build one of these pulse motors and you get the thing to function and you learn some things from it, that to me is a win. And taking all these other ideas and potentials, mine, you know, I posted on the actual picture itself, I said, pulse motor idea, will it work? And, you know, you take this idea, you build it, you try it out, it's a simple idea. If it don't work, then come back and tell me why it didn't work and what possible solutions that you could do to actually make it work. Essentially, mine has a coil on one side that makes an AC pulse that goes through a DC rectifier and sends that pulse across to an opposite coil that could either be in the same polarity or reverse the coil in the opposite direction to be the opposite polarity, whichever the case may be necessary for. And when that pulse goes there, it repels itself away from the magnet or pulls itself by or whatever. And so the only power input is the initial spin that you put on it to send the power across. I also posted a second nearly identical picture that has a capacitor in the circuit, a resistor in the circuit, and an LED so that you can see when the coil comes past the magnet, if it puts a charge to the capacitor and actually lights the LED up, that you're actually getting a charge to the opposite side or whatever. And then if the magnetic field from the DC pulse on the opposite side is strong enough to interact with the magnetic field of the actual permanent magnet itself, then you should get a repulsion.
Whoops. Sorry about the traffic. I'm outside now.
So, did you understand any of that?
I understood some of it. I couldn't figure out which, you know, one thing you need to, you know, the drawing didn't show was which direction the coils are wound, which, you know, with the magnets there, looking at the other side, because one side's got the, one side's got the rectifier.
Yep.
That tells you, well, you know what the polarity of the electricity is, but is the other coil on the other side the opposite or the same? Or?
Well, that, like I said, that's why an idea is an idea. You can reverse if the...
An idea is to play with.
Yeah, if you spin it one direction and it's trying to go back the opposite direction, all you have to do is take and flip the coil over in the other direction, and now you got to spin the direction that you want it.
Try it both ways and see what kind of results you get.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
That's why it's an idea.
Yeah, and if this is a plausible design that actually works, you can take it even further and build some creative 3D printable versions that, you know, you put the parts on there. You can buy those bridge rectifier kits online for like 99 cents. and, you know, bearing system in the center. And the version that I was talking about earlier would have two more pairs of what you see right there. And so there would actually be, see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 coils involved in the system. And so 8 coils, half of those would have bridge rectifiers. So there's 4 bridge rectifiers that you'd need for the 8 coils or whatever. And then the capacitors and the resistors, you know, times 4 as well. So really not a lot of parts necessary when one bearing. You could build that design and see if it actually worked. And if it functions like it looks like it would mechanically, you could even mirror the same exact rotor and flip it over end over end so that every single one of them had a AC pulse and every single one of them had a DC pulse. You see what I'm saying?
Yup. Hey, had an idea. Exactly how to build it might be a little fun. Every, you know, like I said, idea. You ever watch a tethered ball go around the pole and it gets smaller and smaller, you know, circle and speeds up?
Yeah.
If that pole was on a motor and it turned, that ball would find, between the friction and the air, that ball would find its optimum distance from the pole at different speeds.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, say we had 4 magnets swinging from that pole, and it would go out so far, and you had coils out there that the magnet couldn't run into because, you know, the magnets would swing. Say they were on swing arms, they would swing out, and you'd have this perfect circle. But you could put the coils out there so far, and at one speed, magnets would be passing over the coils directly.
Yeah.
Then, if you drew too much from the coils, then that would slow down the armature or the magnet rotor, which would bring them off the coils, limiting how much it could put into the coils. And I figure it would be an optimum efficiency for whatever power is going into the pole. It would adjust automatically.
Well, what I like about your idea design already is that once those magnets get up to speed, you got that centrifugal force. That's why I was saying that I want to get a hold of one of the old style steel merry-go-rounds like you find on playgrounds. Because if you ever got one of them started, when you try to stop that thing, those things will drag you across the playground.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it builds up some stored energy in the flywheel effect, and it, you know, because of the weight of it and the mass and the centrifugal force, once you get them going.
Well, the centrifugal force is what's trying to sling you off. It's the momentum that's awesome.
Well, either way, imagine you got a really small generator on the bottom of this deal. Once you got it started, the mass and the centrifugal force of this thing spinning around the way that it does is more than any drag effect that would be occurred from that small generator actually being under a load such as having a light bulb on. You see what I'm saying? The mass on one side is higher than on the other side. So, you know, at some point, you know, even that little tiny bit of drag would start to slow it down, but it would keep it going much longer for efficiency, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Self-adjusting, like an automatic furling mechanism.
Yeah.
The length and the weight of the tail tells it what speed it's supposed to go out of the wind.
And using
work automatically, doesn't need any power to make it work, and all that. Just
yeah, and using what things like leverage, like the two-stage oscillator that Raymond was talking about, and Maybe put some sails on this thing, like the doggone surfboards that have wind sails on them.
Yeah.
And so you would have a system that would be picking up any wind that was coming through the deal. You'd have the centrifugal force, plus you'd have the weight and the mass and all that would be able to overcome a small generator, and potentially that generator could put out enough power to do the equivalence of what Raymond had to do with pushing his finger on the other deal to lift the weight on the opposite side. You see what I'm saying? So, they say that there's too many losses in the system, but I think that there's a solution for every single one of them. And
if you got a voltage on a line, you got a voltage divider, and that's by resistances, and that means you're going to have losses, but you wouldn't have any voltage control without the losses.
Yeah, because either way,
sometimes that can actually help you out. As long as you're not dissipating energy and heat, you have current and resistance, you have heat, and that's heat dissipation in watts.
That's right, and I took that design right there, that Peltier element design, which I'd love to see somebody build to its, give it an actual fair build. I mean, don't hold back on anything and insulate it as much as possible, and see how long that hot energy and that cold energy will be stored in those insulated containers. Because if the laws of physics are correct, and energy can neither be created nor destroyed, and there's no potential loss from the power source to the energy transfer system that you put it in.
Yeah.
It's basically, I just move the energy from that battery to the system itself. I changed it completely, changed the whole form of energy. Now it's no longer electricity, it's heat energy. And until I make that circuit and give it a path back the other direction, and as long as those two temperature differences remain the same, the Seebeck effect that for thermoelectric will continue to function as long as one side is colder than the other.
You know, they got solar energy storage, which is supposed to be more efficient than the batteries, and that is in heat. And that what they have is pressurized containers full of super saturated salt water.
Yep.
Yep, and that will hold heat to heat several buildings for the whole night. And I don't know, I think that's pretty cool.
Well, sure it is.
As it loses heat, the salt crystals just build up on the outside, and it kind of helps it in a thermal insulative way to keep the rest of it.
Yeah.
But it's drawn from the inside. I think it's pretty cool.
Well, that's the whole deal. Take those concepts of how they use stored thermal energy. Take these concepts of different ideas, put them all together, put them on the table, and you got the tools to work with in order to produce the most super efficient generating system in the history of time. I know it can be done with 3D printing technology and all the different types of materials availability and all the different designs. There ain't no reason why we couldn't literally build a motor generator that wouldn't work, that wouldn't defy any of the known laws of physics. I mean, even if this one simple idea that I come across over here about this drawing right here, maybe it's got a flaw in it. I don't see it yet, but maybe it does have a flaw in it. But maybe you'll find the one thing that will be the solution, such as something that's going to turn that coil on and off at a certain time instead of having the potential of, as it's passing through a coil, the magnets producing another magnetic field that's going to try to attract it. If the DC pulse is stronger and it repels it on the opposite side, maybe there might be a split second where you have to use like a reed switch or a doggone, what the heck to call it? I just said it earlier. Hall effect sensor to detect the magnetic field coming its way, and then when it gets past that particular side, then it will release the energy stored in the capacitor in the form of a DC pulse that will repel that magnet. So there's a possible solution. But before you shoot this idea down, because in your head you see there might be a potential problem, if you think there might be a potential problem and you're not willing to go any further to find out if there is a potential problem, if there is actually a solution to that potential problem, then you very well may be overlooking what could potentially be an electric motor that absolutely has no... It basically produces its own onboard power by the first initial drag across the magnetic flux lines for the coil to produce an AC pulse. Which would mean that this thing would literally, without the friction losses or anything like that, would literally continue to work. And if for some reason, the best case scenario, it was able to even overcome any friction losses and just transfer that energy from one side to the next, it would run indefinitely. Now, am I saying this particular design is going to do that? No, I'm saying it's an idea that if you took as far as it could possibly go, you might just be surprised at what it could accomplish. Because those...
Or at least some darn good efficiency.
Yeah. And that's the very least good efficient. And those magnets are a power source, even though the magnetic field, according to most folks that you asked, that magnetic field is static and it's not really moving, which I think that if you was actually be able to get down there and look in the microscopic realm of what's going on down there, if you could actually see that energy, you might be surprised. There might be actual movement going on as those energy forces are going from north to south and producing those flux lines to begin with. But nonetheless, there's a power source right there. It's a stored energy inside a permanent magnet, or neodymium, ceramic magnets, whatever, any type of magnet. Once that thing's magnetized and it's holding them lines of flux, and until you drop it or get it too hot and destroy the magnet, that's a battery that just keeps on going. Just keeps on giving. And instead of moving the magnets past the coils mechanically, you're actually moving the coils past the magnets mechanically, using one side to repel the other.
Right.
So, what are your thoughts on it, Muddy?
Oh, shoot, man. I was thinking other things at the same time, but
that's what ideas do. They get your brain going in all different directions, give you yet even more ideas.
Oh, yeah, I'm scatterbrained. That's only because the brain does work.
But at some point, I need some people to try these ideas. Try them out. You know, I'm always having people telling me, because I believe it'll work, well, make it, Well, I'm doing the best I can trying to make so many different ideas, but I got tons and tons of ideas, and so I put them down on diagrams such as these and put them out there for the world, and it might take me a while to get to actually build a copy of what you see right there, but meanwhile, I just handed it out there to you. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So at least the idea is on the table and it's not forgotten. It's actually...
You know what a tangent is, right? Or a tangent thought? That's kind of one spurred on by other thoughts. Kind of like the guy that invented the weed eater, man.
Yeah.
But just started sharpening the blade or ruining the shaft on the motor, and he said, well, shoot, I'm tired of bending over and cutting these doggone weeds with the scissors. And he figured, well, let's make a little mini lawnmower and let's use, and one day he was swinging a rope with a weight on it and it knocked down some tall grass. So shoot, let's see if fishing string's pretty tough. Let's play with that, My tangent when I was sitting there thinking about that was the incandescent bulb is a light source, but the light is a byproduct of heat.
Yeah.
the incandescent bulb is mainly a heater.
Yeah.
A byproduct of light. And so, I mean, it's not very efficient. But with that solar oven that I made, I was sitting there thinking, what if I had the light bulb under some salt water? I wonder how much heat I can do, and then run a Stirling engine. And even after the sun goes behind the cloud, it would still be generating. And how efficient that would be as a battery.
Well, if you think about what you just said right there,
that's my tangent that I was on when you were explaining.
Well, listen, this is an electrical device, but these same concepts will also work with water hydraulic devices and heat and cold as well.
Well, you know what I did? I was sitting here thinking about one of them air conditioner compressors on a car. There's something I wanted to do and been wanting to do for a while. If I put that up in the air on a pole and I make me a vertical axis wind turbine, like a Lenz turbine, or even a Sabinus for that point, it might take time or something like that, but I can sit there and store that, I can store air pressure.
Yeah.
And if the tank got too full, I'm sure the pressure relief valve would go off, and if it did that, then go generate some electricity with that through some pneumatics. But in the meantime, I mean, when the tank gets kind of full, I'm pretty sure the thing will spin a little slow, but, oh, shoot, you know the way I think about pressure and current and resistance. Well, it may be, it's voltage, current, and resistance the same way, even if, whether it's water or whether it's air or if it's electricity. It all works the same way.
Well, I've actually had people...
Even if the wind turbine slows down, it's still putting the power that the wind's putting on it because it's now in pressure.
Yeah.
And your pressure or your voltage times your amps equals your wattage. You may not be storing much. It may not be storing much of volume, which you get your current from.
Doesn't matter. It's still a piggy bank. But
right.
Look, here's
it's
the thing.
It's still a piggy bank, and it's a free piggy bank.
I've had people tell me that all we ever do is talk about things. Well, there's a drawing right in front of everyone in the world. There's several drawings with ideas and concepts on there. And even if there might be a flaw in any of these systems right here, the idea was put on the paper, which took actual effort to get in the drawing program and put these ideas down on paper so that they don't get lost in the brain. Because I get tons and tons of ideas all day long, and I could keep on putting these ideas on the table. And if they never get utilized, or maybe somebody replicates them and it doesn't work, and they just drop it from that point instead of trying to figure out why it doesn't work and adding a solution to it, then the idea is only just an idea. Ideas only actually become reality in working devices when somebody is willing to take it and give it a fair try. You see what I mean?
That's the hard part, getting people to listen. You know, when they spilled all that oil down there in the Gulf and towards Louisiana and all that, and it started washing up, you know, BP oil, remember?
Yep. Sent ideas, many people sent ideas, but, you know, they weren't listened to.
Yeah, it told me that they had their own thing that they wanted to do. It was already figured out. All that deal of send your ideas is with nothing but PR. So it's hard to get people to listen. I had an idea if they were actually wanting to make millions of dollars or save millions of dollars instead of polluting the doggone coast and the life there, I'm pretty sure mine would have done great. I mean, if you got oil floating on top of water and you stick your hand in up to your elbow and you pull it out, your arm is not covered with water, it's covered with oil, sludge, and some water. So you've seen the steamrollers, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you make a boat with this kind of funnel thing on front of it. There's only so many gallons of oil there, right? So you make a boat that's got a V out in front of it that basically takes what's floating on the top, and you got this roller in the front spinning over backwards
with a squeegee to a funnel,
And then you got this squeegee that's in a V shape on the roller.
Yeah.
And it would just basically take what sticks to the roller and start loading it up into the bottom of the boat. Just like, you know, well, I'm sure there's going to be a percentage of water, but this could go to a refinery and be refined, and they could save their money.
Sure it can.
It would pick up a lot. A whole lot better than something like a vacuum cleaner or trying to round it up with this stuff that they put in the water. And that, you know, that pollutes it. This would be totally green, you know. They just go out there, and if they get the boat, they keep going around the outer edge and or start in the middle even, you know. I don't care. But basically, if you were going, you just took your time, went across, they could have got all of what was floating. It doesn't take care of the heavy stuff that went to the bottom, but you know what? That lighter stuff is your gasoline and all the and those kind of fuels. We got enough plastic already, yeah. I'd say. That's my thoughts on it. And I sent it in, and just like all the other people that sent it in, we come to find out and figure it out. And I'm pretty sure there were ideas that you never heard of, just as genius or even better.
Well, Stephen Gibbons posted.
But they didn't use any of them. No, they put these deals on oil-eating microbes. Yeah, okay. Now we got some strange life down in the Gulf.
Stephen Gibbons posted a link inside the chat room of one of those little toys, that Solar Dancing Turtle. It's basically got a turtle in the hammock with a drink, and I'm going to buy one of those. It's really neat. But
so the sun hits it, and what's it do?
It's got a little turtle laying in a hammock, and basically the turtle would swing back and forth on the hammock, you know.
Yeah, with a drink in his hand, right?
Yeah. See, some folks have figured out how to take these ideas and put them into, physical devices and make money off of them. You know, this little turtle swinging back and forth on the hammock's pretty cool, man. But, you know, if you didn't just leave it as just being a toy, and then you actually took this idea yet even farther, that swinging back and forth motion could literally be dragging a magnet back and forth, going back and forth across coils of wire, and producing yet even more energy. You're just moving the energy from one form to the next, and the normal losses would be, you know, reduced at the very least. You see what I'm saying? Because according to the laws of physics, tell me if I'm wrong, it says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
Right.
So all you're doing is moving it from one form to the next. Even heat losses. Heat losses is the waste product of, you know, some resistance in the coils. And so that heat loss gets transferred off. It's still a form of energy. It just gets transferred off into the atmosphere, which eventually the temperature, you know, difference between the atmosphere and the heat dispersed from the deal will cool down and, you know, whatever. You see what I mean?
Well, you're trying to cool the place, you got the hot element inside, that's wasted energy.
Yeah.
But it's still there. It has not been destroyed. It's just working against you. And that's the main thing. You can't sit there and put the hot and the cold side on the same side and expect a result.
No, but if you keep those two temperature difference constant, then Seebeck effect will remain. Steven said, now if you fit a ratchet where his hammock is attached, you could create rotation. And you could. You could actually produce some torque, too, because of the length of the handle of the ratchet. You know, that's the whole thing. We can... if you say take a big stone and you can't move the stone because it's too heavy for one guy and you ain't got multiple people, you can get a really long pole and put one end down there and put a rock in the middle of it that you can use that distance for leverage, And one guy can now lift that one heavy stone that he couldn't otherwise lift before. I mean, we got tons of tools, hydraulic jacks that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you can pump water. You can do all sorts of things, and you can actually get your leverage through gearing as well. I mean, look, if you've got a framework that's got a big sheet on the middle of it, you know, about the size of a piece of plywood, and the wind comes by and then the wind doesn't, and you got it on a ratcheting deal with a spring that brings it back, or it really wouldn't even matter all that much as long as it was hanging from up. Any wind at all from either direction would ratchet and keep good. Let's say you had a 350-gallon water tote, and rather than pumping the water, just chain hoisted up there, but with a lot of leverage. I mean, you can take one of them power wheels, electric motors out of the power wheels, and I'm pretty sure let's just say I'm not going to drink 350 gallons of water all at once, but people want to get that water up now. But who cares? I mean, you put it up there that high, and that's so that you got the right pressure to do what you want and water the lawn. You know what? You're not going to use that water 24/7. It's like a refrigerator.
Yep.
It uses a lot of watts, but it doesn't run but a small percentage of the time.
Well, once you actually have maximum pressure, that you know this is how much pressure you got to work with, and then you can take that maximum amount of pressure and do a little bit of mathematics to see how long of a lever that you could use for leverage and be able to basically double the weight that you're pushing up. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. They had the definition of horsepower, I don't remember the exact of it, was so many pounds lifted so many feet in a certain amount of time.
But the difference
but horsepower is the same thing as wattage. Now, if we got wattage, like 746 watts equals one horsepower, well, you know, what if you're only doing like 5 watts? You know, go to sleep. Let the machine do the work. And it, you know, when you wake up, it's pretty much done, or you just let it go a little more. Same thing as the lens turbine sitting up there pumping that air into that tank. I mean, you could use one of them 12-volt tire pumps.
Yeah.
To fill you up a big old tank. Doesn't matter. It'll be there when you're ready. And I'm sure that if you put too much in there, the pressure relief valve will be off. And you never have to have a big electric bill to run the stupid compressor.
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to use the compressor all day like a tire shop.
Well, Stephen Gibbons posted in the chat room, Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I shall move the world. That's
kinda
true.
Like that, kind of like the death ray, the big mirror, paraboloid, burning the ships down with it.
Yeah.
That was Archimedes' mirror, wasn't it? Yeah.
But either way, you're talking about something that they say isn't possible because you can never get out more than you're putting in. Well, maybe you're not getting out more than you're putting in. Maybe you're just focusing the energy to be able to do more work than you would have otherwise been able to do, which, you know, if you think about Raymond's two-stage oscillator, and he's basically using, you know, a finger to push this thing, and it's raising up a heavy weight on the other side, that's what I keep trying to point out. That lever right there, you measure, if you got 60 foot-pounds per square inch of downforce, and you got a lever long enough, how much more work can you get done with that 60 pounds per square foot downforce on lifting something on the opposite side, which at that point over there could literally be that deal that would overcome the drag effect on a generator. If you understand what I'm saying, like,
right.
They got them wave generators that they put out in the ocean that has a paddle that goes back and forth, and they produce electricity that people can use. All right, well, there ain't nothing stopping you from using that leverage force that you've got for a paddle system on the opposite side to do the exact same thing, and all you have is the downforce of this water that maybe you already had to store up, or maybe you don't even store it up there, Maybe you just build a rain barrel and the rain fills it up and it's already come from the sky, so it's already there. That water fills up the tank, and once that tank is filled up, that float will open up the valve and drop that water down. The downforce of that water, you could actually have used intermittently, so it would only allow maybe a gallon or two at a time through this system, and then it would stop for a second, and then the float would pop back up, and so on. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
But either way, you could use that to overcome those forces. Stephen Gibbons said in the chat room, I wonder why they only built these for 3 years. Oh, they are reliable and last over 20 years. The nickel iron battery, knife battery is rechargeable battery having nickel oxide hydrogen positive plates and iron and negative plates, which the electrolyte of potassium hydroxide, the active materials, are held in the nickel plate steel tubes or perforated pockets. It is a very robust battery which is tolerant of abuse, overcharge, over discharge and short circuiting, and can have very long life. Even if it is so treated, it is often used backup situations where it can continuously charged and can last for more than 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, they last longer than that. Jay Leno's got some of these old cars, the antique cars that used the nickel metal batteries, and they're still, I mean, he's replaced some of them, but, you know, some of these batteries are still kicking. And I've got some nickel cadmium batteries that came from railroad from the engines, because basically that engine that's running is nothing but a diesel engine that turns a generator and charges all the doggone batteries in it. And the batteries are what turn the motors on the wheels. And when you wonder why, when they're sitting in the train yard, you're listening to them diesel engines just revving up while they're inside having a break. And then they come out there, and then they take off, and you hear them rev up a little bit more. Then they're using everything that they've stored up in them batteries, plus the engines, to get the momentum going, to get them trains going.
Yeah, but once they get them going, they even have regenerative braking, where it's actually putting juice back into the system every time they use the brakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I got a hybrid car. It does the same thing.
Well, see, there you go. And this is what really, you know, kind of gets on my nerves. And
you know what's trippy? You know, you get in this car, and you drive around, you're looking at, and it shows an LED thing on the side there showing you how much charge your batteries are, and you're looking at like 300 volts or more. Am I still here?
Yeah, you're still here. I'm listening.
Okay, the computer screen went blank, that's why. Anyway, so I stop, and all of a sudden I don't hear a motor. I don't hear anything. It's dead silence. This thing has shut off. The engine is stopped, the little engine that sits there and runs the generator as well, and drives the wheels partially and uses the electric motor as the assist or the main drive. All of that is stopped. I'm in dead silence, so it doesn't matter. I can leave my foot on that brake for an hour, and I haven't wasted any fuel. As soon as I take my foot off the brake, the motor's running, and I do not hear the starter motor engaging the flywheel. No, that motor's in direct line with that motor, which is also a generator, is in direct line with that engine. So as soon as I let my foot off the brake, it's the same as if I pressed on the gas, and that motor itself actually starts turning the motor.
Yeah.
So it's like it's automatically at idle. It's instantly just brrr. You hear no mesh, no grind, no nothing. And I think that's awesome.
Well, it's amazing because the technology that you just explained has been around for so long. In
right.
tractors, they use motor generators starter generators that the starter is the generator. Once the engine gets up to its RPMs, it overcomes the other portion and produces electricity back the other direction. So
the thing is, it's freaky because you all of a sudden, oh, my engine died, and you're used to, you know, you get in a car and your engine died, you usually got this thing where you want to go ahead and start it, but you don't have to. I mean, it just, we're pausing for you, buddy. That's all.
Yep. The amazing
hard to get used to.
The really amazing is. Thing about that starter generator, as long as your starter starts the doggone thing up, you know your generator's working.
It will not work unless the battery's fully charged. And then you got your regular battery to restart the car if you want. But,
yeah.
But the thing is, it's not going to die. It won't die if it's not charged up. So your motor will keep going. You'll see that in the meantime, it's charging the charging the batteries.
Well, the point of that whole deal of the starter generator is that you build electric cars that the actual motor itself becomes the generator as well as just
yep.
as the starter. I mean, there's no reason.
I was really happy when Jim offered to sell us to me, and I said, well, shoot, if I got something that's making good mileage like that, I might as well do the paperwork. I said, Melissa can work more with you, and y'all can make more money, and that'd be great for both of us.
Yeah.
So, actually, I finished paying it off 2 days ago. That's $1,200. Paid it off with the paper route. Now I got the paper route in my name, and I got control of a lot of it. And I go out at night, and I do that. And I've seen 48 miles to the gallon. And when you first fill it up, if you're going like 30 or 40 miles an hour on cruise while you're rolling papers on the way out there, I seen 58 miles to the gallon. I said, oh, man, I love it. But if you start driving like an idiot, I mean, you can go all the way down to like 32. But I think it's cool. But what the thing is, for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been sitting there thinking about building that three-wheeled bike, three-wheeled reverse trike,
yep.
recumbent, where you let you just about lay down on it. And seeing as my Peugeot got clocked at 45 mile an hour huh. with nothing but a 27.2cc two-stroke motor. It came from a still blower, and I had a skateboard wheel on top of the tire behind me. And
yeah.
a dishwasher spring for the tension, so it's a friction drive. Which meant you fill that back tire up. But it never wore the tire out. It wore the skateboard wheel. And as the skateboard wheel wore down smaller, I had a lot more bottom end, which still wasn't much. But the top end was great. And yeah, I'd still cruise at 25, 30 mile an hour. You know, no problem. And I enjoyed that. So I'm sitting there thinking, well, gosh, man, it's just a 27. The legal limit for a moped is supposed to be 49 cc's or below. In other words, under 50 for a moped. And they get like 125 miles to the gallon or something close to that. Now, if I got that little weed eater rotor and I put a little axial flux on it, which is 97% plus efficiency, or the tape drive motor, and I put a few batteries on it, and I keep them charged up. So I was thinking hybrid long before I figured out hybrid. And I just have me two on-off switches. I can do 12 volt or 24 volt or whatever, and that's basically a pedal assist. I'm sure I could get a lot more than just, well, let's put it this way. If I'm on a regular 10-speed, I'm standing up pretty much. My body's vertical, and it's got a lot of wind resistance. And every time the wind speed doubles, or you double your speed, it takes 8 times the power or your wind turbine collects 8 times the power, or you need 8 times the power to get to that speed, vice versa. So here's the deal on a recumbent. If I was doing 45, you think I'd, with the same little 27.2 cc two-stroke motor, which is going to get me about 125 miles a gallon, if I'm laying down, it's like throwing a playing card at the wind. The difference between standing up a piece of plywood and walking towards the wind, or carrying it flat, where you feel no resistance. I'm sure 45 miles an hour is nothing but a joke to that.
Well,
and the efficiency would go up even better. So this is what I'm planning on. So I'm going to take the tape drive motor or a mini axial flux to charge a couple batteries. And if I want more voltage, I hit both switches. You look at the battery level, whichever for your low speed, if whichever one has the highest charge, well, kick that one on first. Keep your batteries kind of level, but charge them up through diodes as the same.
Well, the whole thing is that...
The other thing is when I'm sitting at a red light or a stop sign, the batteries are going better. So I get a lot more power out of the thing than I would normally.
Well,
same fuel efficiency.
Not to mention if you had outside influence such as solar panels on the top of it that was adding to the system. But the whole thing is...
Wow. Yeah.
Is
shade.
Understanding how the energy's moved... understand how to store the energy, understanding, what they would have classified losses, which I'm trying to sit here and say there are no losses if you utilize the energy that would have normally been dispersed into the atmosphere, such as waste heat or whatever. Nonetheless, you can make things at the very least super efficient, which would require even less fuel in order to do so. And if anybody is to ever be able to give to the world the equivalence of free energy, free electricity, or whatever, then these little experiments that we're talking about need to be factored in, and need to take these ideas and run with them. A lot of these deals that have been posting out here are experiments that could be tried on a small scale for very little money whatsoever, you know, using parts that you might even be able to salvage. But even at that, at some point, people have got to start to get together in teams and just start taking these ideas and trying them, giving them a fair chance, and trying to put these devices together and showing, you know, their results, whether they be, flawed or not flawed. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, I'll let you in on a little bit more of the idea, what brings it and makes us even better.
Well, how about you hold that thought for a second? We take a music break and I can refresh my coffee.
No, finish up while it's still fresh, because we'll change.
All right, well, you go ahead and finish that and I'll go get my coffee.
All right. Well, here's the thing. With the... with the weed eater motor on a friction drive on the top of the tire, there's no gearing, there's no clutch. That means if I stop, this is on the 10-speed Peugeot that I got clocked at 45 on. If I stop, that makes the weed eater motor stop. So, in essence, there's no clutch. So I tied a cord from the boom that goes up and down and drops the wheel on top of the tire to my shoulder on the left side, and all I did was lean forward, and that lifted the motor up. It worked, and it was okay. It's kind of awkward, but it seemed to be a problem. And then when I'd let the motor down, that means I had to pedal first and get it moving to about 7 or 8 miles an hour, or the engine would die. But being an electric motor, there's no need to disengage while I'm slowing down. It doesn't mean it also means that I don't have to be friction drive. I could be direct drive, maybe on a chain on the opposite side of the rim, or coupled to it somehow. But I'm figuring maybe just a small chain drive. The electric motor would spin and make the regeneration and put that back in. Thus, I would need no. There would be no need for a clutch whatsoever, because you either disconnect the motor and it spins free like a bicycle wheel, or you go ahead and put power to it, or you can short it out for braking after you get down below the battery voltage, which is be a little bit of waste, but who cares on that? So, no clutch, regeneration, and pretty much direct drive, and not having to sit there and pedal the thing up. And the cool thing is not having to pedal up to 7 or 8 miles an hour in order to engage it and everything. I call that efficiency.
Well, my point of view, if you actually want to build an electric car that will regenerate itself, I mean, charge it on the fly, that it, we have all the technology necessary to do so.
Oh, yeah.
And
got
so,
enough parts out in my yard, too. I just got to get around to it.
The only drawback that we got in this entire deal, because every single piece of the puzzle necessary for free energy has been put on the table for so long, is that people, you know, like Henry Ford said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And when
you
people
think you can, if you think you can, you're right. If you think you can't, you're still right.
Yeah, same thing. But nonetheless,
yeah.
Until somebody actually takes the time to run with these ideas, and that's why I keep putting these diagrams out there, because even if they're not going to work, and that's why I put on this pulse motor idea, will it work? Won't know until we try it. But, you know, until I get around to trying it, at least I put that idea on the table for somebody else to run off with, you know, because I really get tired of people telling me all we ever do is talk about free energy devices and we don't, you know, ever build some of the ideas, but we're not just talking for ourselves. We're talking for the world out there. Take these ideas and run with them.
Yeah, Larry always said the same thing. He says, just do it.
Yeah.
In essence,
they're free.
Do it.
They're free of charge. Ideas are free.
Yeah, nobody taught me how to carve a prop out of a piece of 2x4. I did it.
Yeah.
Now, they're seeing how to do it, laminate a few pieces up on some of the 2x6 and stuff like that. But I said, I got a 2x4. Why not? Matter of fact, my first prop that I carved was out of a piece of trim that came from the side of a door. And, I mean, I tapered it and did all of that. And I said, oh man, it doesn't have enough pitch towards the hub. But I went to the beach and I put that thing, I had a hole about the size of my screwdriver, and I stuck that screwdriver on there and a couple washers, and I greased it. I turned it towards the wind and it didn't seem to start up. It turned and it was slow. Then I gave it a push, and it got to cut-in speed, and that's the speed where that's the speed where when the prop is moving fast enough that the Venturi curve sees it at the right angle and actually gets lift. And I felt it push back, and it went, and I said, whoa, and I was hanging on to it, and I forgot, you know, that if I turn it out of the wind, it would slow down. I'm saying, man, how am I going to stop this thing? And it was spinning good, and I was hanging on to it, and I was grinning from ear to ear, and my adrenaline was going, and then some big wind hit, and that thing hit some higher pitch, and that thing was spinning good. I mean, because it was very low pitch, which means a higher tip speed ratio. I think I hit something like 30 mile an hour winds, and I'm pretty sure I had about a 6 or 7 tip speed ratio on that thing.
Yeah.
So you multiply it up there, and I finally said okay, and I turned sideways a little bit, and that was the end of that prop, because when I turned sideways, the momentum kept it spinning, but there wasn't as much wind in front of it, so it didn't press against my hand no more. As a matter of fact, it took off and went into the air like a whirligig toy and hit the wall, and that thing shattered. I mean, it went all over the place, and I was like, woo-hoo-hoo, and my adrenaline was still kicking, and, you know, I was hooked from then on. That piece of wood did not cost me a dime. I picked it up, and I was not afraid to put the first nick into it, because it didn't cost a dime. And all these, I've had so many people on there after on my prop carving tutorials and stuff, that tell me, would I carve a prop for them? They're afraid to. I said, what are you afraid of? The 2x4 cost you $2.76, and you can get two of them out of it. And if you nick it and gouge it, just nick and gouge the other side the same way. The only thing is, just make it balance. The wind really don't care because it's soft, but it'll feel pretty solid when that thing's spinning. And the other lesson I learned on that is basically, if you're going to do that thing like I did, put the screwdriver in the end of a piece of pipe where you got some leverage to hold the back deal so that thing can't turn on you. Because when it's spinning that fast, it's like weed eater string. It can cut grass, it can cut sticks, it can cut up a whole bunch of stuff. But we're dealing with a piece of wood. You can decapitate yourself. Not very safe, not very smart. But I tell you what, it's one hell of a rush.
Well,
who needs cocaine? Who needs coffee? Who needs? I got adrenaline bubble.
Stephen Gibbons posted a link in the chat room for a self-balancing electric motorcycle, and he says but Apple seems to be trying to buy them out and headhunt their staff to the buggers. Anyway. A lot of good ideas out there getting bought up and shelved by companies out there. And, you know, if I really wanted to try to make some doggone money and, you know, become wealthy or whatever, I probably wouldn't be putting all these ideas right out there on the table. You know, for example, let's say hypothetically you tried this design, and for some reason, pulse motor idea, it actually worked I thought it would. And you rush out, you get a patent on it, you sell it, and become rich or whatever. And then for some reason, somebody comes and buys it away from you because it's too efficient and it gets shelved. Well, the diagram's still out there. I put it out there on the table for everybody. So once everybody's got this diagram, then the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak. You know, the cat's out of the bag, and people know that it can be done. So even if they try to hide this idea, it's already done. Especially if you take this idea and you download the drawing. You know, it maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work. But if it does work, and they decide to try to patent it and do all the stuff they want with it, then you've already got a copy of it and you can replicate it yourself. That's the whole point of all this. But if you wanted to get rich, I'd hide it. Huh?
If I was going to be a two-faced sucker and go ahead and sell out, three things would have to happen. Number one, they'd have to pay me in Bitcoin. And they'd have to pay the taxes on the stupid thing. And they'd have to promise that it would go into production.
Well,
or they'd give me the patent back and I keep my money. It must go into production.
But my point in all of this kind of stuff is I'm giving this idea away for free. I'm giving all these ideas away for free. And whether they work or don't work, still giving them away for free. And so people should try to take a run with these ideas and see how far they can take them. You're going to learn something no matter what you do.
Yep.
You know, there's guys out there like Keshi out there stealing thousands of dollars from people and not giving what he promised to them. And, you know, that puts a black eye on the whole community of alternative energy research that, you know, when you try to find something that works, and if you actually do find something that works, it's kind of like the whole boy who cried wolf thing. Unless you're willing to allow somebody to come over there and measure this and prove it and all that kind of stuff, nonetheless, you're not going to be able to just rush right out there and patent it. There's too many variables involved in the deal. You know, there's companies that don't want free energy devices out there. You're going to meet all kinds of resistance, and even the patent process itself is expensive as all get out. There's all kinds of reasons that will hinder you in the process of trying to give to the world free energy. But if you just take these ideas and you try them before you deny them, you might just find you might be right there where you need to be all along, build the doggone thing and make it produce electricity. You know,
that's why I said what I said. The main deal is, see, if you go out there and you try to patent something that's free energy, or even over Unity, they ain't going to give you a patent on it. But if some guy's willing to give me the money I need for life, and I know it's going to go into production, that might actually get it to where it's going. And if he doesn't, then it comes back to me, and I get to keep my money. And that means I now have the money to go ahead and do put it out there.
Well, yeah, now,
like I said, I thought this through for a long time, and it's not the way I'd like to go, but if it seems that's what it takes to get it out there.
Well, and that's probably the best case scenario.
Yeah,
but I told people, I don't know how many times, I'll give you these ideas. I'll hand them over because I got thousands of them that come to me every doggone day, and I draw down the ones that I think are going to work, and I put them out there on the table. Even if they don't work, it's still a thought experiment or whatever you want to call it that will give you the opportunity to take that anomaly that's occurring. Like, for example, the doggone heat, the way to store heat and cold. All right, somebody figured out how to store heat and cold, and they made a thermos. They made a lot of money off of it. But nonetheless, that anomaly of the thermos is pretty brilliant, because if you put cold in there, it'll stay cold. If you put heat in there, it'll stay hot. It's because they understood the resistance factor of insulation, and they knew what would be the best insulator. They actually used glass with a air void in between the glass where it holds the liquid, and then the outer container that would be subject to the temperature of the atmosphere, and were able to make a thermos that would hold heat for long periods of times, or even cold for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Those ideas expanded on, and now you got a Peltier element that you know that when you put power to it, one side will get colder and one side will get hot, and those two can actually transfer their energy into an insulated system that will hold the cold and hold the hot. So now you've got, at the very least, an energy storage system, the equivalence of a battery. You know, if as long as the one container is hot and the other container is cold, and there's still the heat sinks and the things are still in contact with the Peltier element, once you release the power from that and close the circuit on to the output of the positive and negative, that energy will literally begin to travel backwards, and it actually will change itself from hot and cold to electrical current using the Seebeck effect. You see what I'm saying?
Seebeck effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just took and proved that you could not only store this energy in a completely different form, but then turn around and have that reverse, because as that current is flowing backwards through the system to the power output, and the power input is no longer in the equation, then that hot and cold difference will eventually, you know, drain itself off, just like using a battery. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So you're just taking that energy. You're not creating it. You're not destroying it. You're just taking that energy and using it in reverse. It went from cold to electricity. So that's a really super simple idea. If somebody took that idea and expanded on it, there's so many different potential usages for that. Using the Peltier element, you could do both your heating and cooling and electrical with that particular design. How many Peltier elements could you fit on a huge heat sink, you know? And if the If you got 100 Peltier elements on one heat sink, liquid cooled heat sink, and you use one side for hot and one side for cold, when you heat up the hot side and the cold side, all the Peltier elements in line will now have a temperature difference. So you'd only have to run one Peltier element to get an electrical current out of all the other ones. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because you would, as long as the one was running, you would be transferring that energy to heat and cold. And once those two sides of the containers that held the water in there would get up to their operating temperature, all the rest of them in line would now have a temperature difference, and the Seebeck effect would begin in each one of them once the temperature difference began. And it would continue for as long as the temperature difference remained. So you could take and build a multi-stage Peltier element that where you had 10 to 100 or more Peltier elements all on sandwiched between two separate large water-cooled heat sinks and build a generator out of it. That went from that little idea, which is just a little cheesy drawing of an idea, to expanding on that idea and making a power generator that would use the temperature difference of the hot and cold. Both sides of those, if you've ever messed with a Peltier element, one side gets hotter than heck and the other side gets colder than heck. It actually built up frost on it. Well, that energy, both hot heat and cold, will transfer to the aluminum heat sink, which will the energy will transfer then to the liquid that is inside the heat sink. And then that difference of temperature in the bottom of the water to the top of the water, as long as there's a temperature difference in the container, a thermodynamic siphon will occur. So you wouldn't even have to have an electric motor to circulate the liquid through the system. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So it's understanding how energy actually travels. And once you understand how energy actually travels, you can use all what would have normally been the losses to your advantage. And as long as neither side of this Peltier element can, or the heat sinks can, are close enough to each other or even insulated in between each other to where the hot heat sink can't transfer its energy directly to the cold heat sink, if you have it properly insulated, then that energy can't transfer from one to the other, changing the temperature difference on the other side. And so you would have a continuous temperature difference that would continue the Seebeck effect, producing electricity. So you could take one Peltier element and cool down the liquid and have that liquid on one side being cold, one side being hot, energizing multiple Peltier elements. What do you think?
You know the first time I saw one of these, they called it a thermocouple. Boy Scout book from the 50s showed a little radio running off a candle.
Yeah.
The way they done this, they had copper wire and they had iron wire, and they had soldered the ends. It would be, it's like you lay your copper wire and your iron wire, which both had the insulation on them, and you'd solder the copper one to the iron one at the top, and then you'd follow the iron one down, and you got another wire laying next to it, it's copper, and you did that all the way around, and you built this long strip of it. And then you laid it flat, and then you started making a circle out of it by just moving it around, leaving where it all fans out, and it's really close in the middle. And then you'd overlay it, and it'd stack it, kind of like going in one of these multi-level garages where you keep on driving in the spiral till you get to the top. So it was like that, and from the looks of it, it was right at about 7 inches tall, maybe 6 inches tall, and it was held up on a little stand, and the candle was placed where the flame was in the middle of all of it, running up it like a chimney. And that's one of my first deals where I said, man, that's the way it is. So if the electricity's off and everything, I can listen to the radio without a battery, without having to worry about it, as long as I had a candle or a small flame. That's not much heat.
Well, one of my favorite things that I've seen is around Christmas time, Mom used to bring out this little deal that had you put a candle on it, and the heat rising would cause the little carrot merry-go-round on the top to spin around from the heat rising up there. It would create a pressure that would cause the little, like they were angels with trumpets, and they would spin around in circles.
I've had two of them, and I think they're amazing. I love them. They're beautiful. But
what? It's still
running
cool.
Running five or six candles on a piece of wood in the holidays is a little scary. But it is a great idea. And
nonetheless, it still goes back to the same examples that I've been saying all along. We know that heat rises, we know the cold air falls, so we can modify our houses to be more efficient just by using that basic science. And everything that we've talked about, we know all the different things that occur when you do certain things, and those anomalies, ways to store energy, ways to change energy, every single doggone piece of the puzzle is on the table and has been for a long time. We could make super efficient machines if we chose to do so, but we're never ever going to get it done by relying on companies, corporations, or governments to do so. You got to essentially build your own doggone dream teams out there. Brilliant individuals in your communities, networking with other people, taking all these ideas that are given freely out here and trying them. You see what I mean?
Yep.
Otherwise, it just ain't going to happen. You know, if people in this world really seriously want free energy, it's there. It's already there. It's ready for the taking. Once the people realize that what we're saying is truth and they understand, they've studied science, basic science, it's there. It's been there all along. Plasma technology, and I'm not talking about Keshi's version of it, the hoodoo voodoo version of it. Plasma technology, where in this same show you said earlier, heat and light are byproduct of one another. Light is heat, heat is light. That's what science says. So you know that if that incandescent light bulb is going to produce heat, and you design that incandescent light bulb to have a copper coil inside there, even a stainless steel coil, you can not only light your room up, but you can heat your water. You can boil your coffee with that light bulb while the light bulb's going on, if it was designed to have a system in there that would take off that radiant heat and transfer it to a copper or stainless or whatever, and use that one light bulb.
Well, I've done tested and proved that. My dad had this big thermos on the truck. I took one of the 12-volt lights and I put it at the... he had an extra cap, and I sat there and I put the light socket on it, and I stuck one of them little 12-volt tail lights in there. We plugged it into the cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
All right. I'll tell you what, yeah, it would darn sure heat that coffee, especially with a thermos, you know, because you can put ice water and pack it mostly with ice. The next day, I actually got a thermos in the back of the car that had ice in it for a day and a half.
All right, let me ask you a question.
They're efficient. They're real efficient. If you're just that bulb is constantly adding heat, that coffee will get hot.
Let me ask you a question. Out there on YouTube, there are videos that will show you how to literally make a homemade light bulb. All right? And normally what they do is they'll take a container, they'll put some sort of tungsten element or some different type of metal element inside there with insulators that for heat wise, for whatever electrical input they put in there, and then they'll vacuum the container out and then they'll put power to it and it'll light up the light bulb.
Yeah.
Now, what if you took that same exact design, but this time around you add, like my plasma reactor, you add a copper coil inside there, so that whenever you put the energy to the element, it lights up the light bulb and that heat is transferred into the copper, and then you can use natural thermal siphon to basically circulate water in and out of this copper tube. You see what I'm saying? Are you still there?
Yeah, I had it on mute.
All right.
I said not quite. Basically, the copper tube is running water through it. You're heating the water in the copper tube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd work. I'm pretty sure.
The easy bake oven basically takes the heat that's coming off of the light bulb to deck it in one direction. So imagine if the element or the tubing, the coil is actually inside the light bulb, in with the vacuum. You see what I mean?
You know, an easy bake oven would be a whole lot more powerful and a whole lot more efficient if it was like that thermos. A suspended wall with a vacuum between the outer part.
Well, listen to what I'm saying here.
I'd say you'd be able to get the food as hot as that tungsten element.
Sure. Listen to what I'm saying here. If that copper tube is like really close to that tungsten element inside there, you know,
inside the bulb. Gotcha.
Yeah. The element is separated from the outside, and the glass on that will get so hot you can't even touch the glass because it'll burn your finger. That's how much heat.
Sounds to me like a coffee maker.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. You could make a light bulb that would literally cook your coffee for you. So you're getting light and you're getting your coffee cooked at the same time.
And then that brings me back to this coffee maker I was going to make with the Fresnel lens. I was just going to use the regular coffee maker element and just focus the beam to where it would cover the whole element there. I forgot about that. I'm glad you reminded me of that.
All right, now here's another thing. Halogen light bulbs that you use for automotive are really bright, and they will really seriously get really hot. I mean, you'll probably burn your finger in half with one if you try to touch it with your bare finger.
Yeah, I imagine them suckers would flash boil some water too.
Yeah, so imagine if you took the equivalence of a 12-volt halogen bulb, and you put a stainless steel tubing inside there that would circulate water through that, how hot that stainless steel tubing would get, and you could literally build a 12-volt water heater that would transfer that heat from that halogen bulb to that stainless steel and make a super efficient doggone hot water heater just using the light off of it and the heat. See what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Steven says, I remember watching these two scientists light up an array of light bulbs outside with the, it looks like a ELF tower in parts as a backdrop live on the news. That was the last time we saw them or their experiment.
Yeah, they were Italian guys, and they buried, I think they buried a radiator in the ground for a ground to get an extra good ground. They throw some salt down there and then fill it back in and some water, and they got some nice results. Is that the same one there, Steve?
Probably. Look, Patty said, yes, we cannot have technology that will liberate us from the energy gods. And that's the whole key, man. They don't want you to know this stuff. Look, YouTube, there's been some people out there made homemade light bulbs on YouTube. I'll draw up another diagram of a light bulb that has a coil system in or tubing system of what I'm talking about, and I'll post that one as well. and I want somebody to try it. Build a homemade light bulb with a tubing inside of it that you can heat water with. Do your measurements of how much the water heats up or how fast it heats up, how much lumens you're getting off of it, how much voltage input, and see what the results are. At the least case scenario, I see that your efficiency of the light bulb just increased because now you're not only using it for a light source, but you're also using it to heat your coffee as well. You see what I mean?
Yep, that's right. You know what? And I'm sorry if it sounds like a rant, but it's a legitimate thought. I think people need to think this way and think about it. And it's one of the reasons why I put myself down in my pallet shed. You know what? If America or a country had no electricity and we didn't have oil, you'd be utilizing all of this stuff.
Yep.
Why? Because you have a need for it. See, if I'm going to be fined $250 because my vehicle that is out of date is not covered by a tarp in my yard due to city code, do you get your wife to go out there and cover it up with a tarp on your before you go down and wait in court for your deal there? No, because the city inspector will come by while the wife is watching a movie or reading a book and plans on getting down there to do it for you, but doesn't because it's not as important to her. This is the main and true or not true scenario. This is my main deal. You will only take care of what is important to you. The same as a person that quits his job and still has a check coming. He'll take a week off and act like it's vacation time and enjoy. And then when the last check gets there and he's got maybe $20 left or less, he'll go out there with very little gas in his car and go try to get a job. Now here's the thing, if he'd have thought about it ahead of time, let's just say he got lucky and got that job. Well, they're going to hold 2 weeks back, and for 2 weeks, you're going to have to walk to work, and you're going to regret, because it wasn't important to you at the time, you're going to regret the fact that you didn't go out there and throw another application in there because you got fired, because you had another check coming. It's what is important to you that makes it your drive, and that's my point. So the drive is basically depends on how important it is to you. That's why people like me who are obsessed with it put themselves into a position that make themselves go out and do goofy things like I do. And you know, and you're obsessed. Anything you enjoy, you will excel at, and that is the reason. Anything that you do not enjoy is next to impossible to learn. Why? Because it's not important to you. That's my rant, and that's my point of view. Until you need it, it's just like you ain't going to quit smoking till you get cancer. Maybe you might still not, but you know, unless it's important to you, you will not go that extra mile that it takes to get something done or do something that's in your best interest. So we got rid of the oil cartel, and we got rid of the electricity from the plants. I guarantee about 80% of the household out here would have some form of electricity at least, or a wood-burning stove and propane or whatever. But the main deal is, until it's important to you, you will not have the drive for anything. So if you want something, even if you do it in a small way, even if you put a little mini prop on a doggone Power Wheels DC electric motor, you'll do it. Maybe do a little bit, and once you do that, you get hooked on it and you want more.
All right, that comment that I posted in the or talked about in the chat room was deal that Stephen posted about a Wikipedia link that he put up there above it. So it's basically the Fleischmann Pons experiment. Anyway, the link is in the chat room, so you'll have to check that out, and then maybe it'll repair the damage that I might have done by reading the comment and not mentioning the link.
In other words, what I'm saying is don't wait till they drop the bomb. You seen how, you watched my video, guess what? The internet's off because there's no electricity because somebody dropped the bomb and everything went crazy. And then you're going to say, well, these guys that sat there and are afraid to put the first nick in a $2.75 2x4 or half of the 2x4 because it might not come out right, guess what? They'll be happy with anything they get out of it. And they'll be trying to do it and then put it together.
Yeah, well, the whole deal about mad science, you know, it's frustrating because you see the answers to all the solutions to all the problems that they say is out there, and you try to pass it on with all these different diagrams and links and positive information, and when you see the world continuously going down the same doggone road, trolls hollering about there ain't no such thing as free energy, and so on down the line, and educated people arguing with people saying, well, you don't know what you're talking about, and all this crazy stuff. You know, it's just frustrating, because as smart as these people think they are, they're fooling themselves, because they hadn't paid attention in basic science. Huh?
They had a saying that started off, don't get mad. And if you ask somebody these days for the second line of that, they'd say, get even. Huh. That was the original deal. Don't get mad, get glad. So, but the thing is, you're not going to get glad until you get mad enough to do it, and then you'll be glad. And that's the main deal from the original statement. Don't get mad, get glad. You sit there instead of, but you know, like I said, something's got to happen before people will actually take action.
Well, either way, energy is free. I don't care what anybody says or how educated they think they are or how much they want to argue or all the different negativities they want to throw towards the situation. Energy
is free. I've been in that situation where I didn't have the water. I've been in that situation where I didn't have the electricity. I didn't get mad. I went out and did something about it. Now that I've done it, I sit there and I say, let's go out there and I want more.
But are you hearing what I'm saying?
No, maybe not.
I am saying that we have more than proven that energy's free. We've given example after example after example of how, at the very least, you can make things so incredibly efficient that, you know, you're using your light bulb as your space heater, for Pete's sake. I got a space heater that I took, used to have some really heavy-duty wattage bulbs in there, and now they got, like, 100-watt bulbs in there as opposed to what they were before, and it still does the job. I didn't need that much power before. I got it down to where I can keep this place where you can live and not freeze to death in your room, and it's using less energy.
So you think maybe that's where they came up with the term mad science? Well, you had to get mad that the thing didn't work and find a way to make it work because you was mad?
Pretty much.
You're glad,
but,
now,
but the other idea that we just mentioned on there about putting elements or a tubing inside of actual light bulbs, you could use the light bulb itself to transfer that wasted heat off of the tungsten element into whether it be copper tubing or even stainless steel tubing, and then, you know, use that same light bulb that you was going to be using anyway to heat your water up. So now you just got a two-for-one kind of deal, which made your system more efficient because now you don't have to have a separate element in order to heat your water with. And the redneck hot tub that I did proves, because there wasn't no insulation above it, there wasn't no insulation below it, I just took a coffee pot element and started circulating water through there, and even though it took a little bit longer for it to actually finally get up to operating temperature, it would get so incredibly hot that you could not sit in it, and in the dead of winter, you could be out there sitting in this thing with steam rising off of it and not freeze. But yeah. It's a super efficient way.
Laid back, you had to get mad.
Well, sure.
You got mad enough to go ahead and do it and say, let's try it anyway. And sure. You found out that you didn't need all that insulation.
But all this other stuff right here is ideas put on the table to get people to understand that the energy is free, number one. And if you utilize it and you know that you're going to have losses in any system, and you know that that energy is still energy because according to their own laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where's it go? It's still there. It's just a different form. It went from electrical energy to heat energy. In the process, you've got mechanical work done that probably during the mechanical portion of it generated yet even more heat from friction. So, when is the world going to take these ideas and use them? That's the question.
When they get mad.
Well, maybe they need to get mad.
That's right. Don't get laid back. Get mad. Then you can get back. Then you can get laid back and glad. So. Huh. Yeah, just do it. Just right. Do it.
Well, that's I'm gonna draw another diagram with a light bulb that has a coil system inside of it, and share that with everybody so that you can just look at the basic concept. And if that coil is anywhere near that element, that heat will transfer straight to the doggone tubing, which then in turn will transfer to the water. And who knows, you might even be able to build a steam engine using light.
So yeah.
What do you think?
And if you need it to happen, then are you gonna be like the weenies that say, I'm afraid to put a nick in the prop until they need it, and then they have to get mad and do it. You tell what, it doesn't matter how efficient it is, just do it. So yeah, put the light on that thing, make that steam go. Oh, Dan at Green Power Science uses a Fresnel lens and puts it on the Stirling engines, and any. Made that piece of pipe, that pipe nipple, and he regulated the water flow into it for whatever speed that Fresnel lens could make steam, and he ran his steam engine, and he generated electricity. You know, there's a mad scientist right there.
Yeah, and, you know, there's other concepts out there like, liquefying salt. You could use the Fresnel lens to put in a container that you would liquefy the salt, and that salt heat would build up in there and transfer the energy from the sun through a lens to through into a glass container or whatever type of container, and then transfer that heat yet once again into another form of energy, and then so on down the line, and at any point you could tap into that energy.
Other than laziness and stuff like that, you know what the other thing that holds people back and holds them back in many aspects of their life is fear. Once you get rid of the fear of failure, the fear of it not working good, or the fear of somebody making fun of you.
Well, I don't have that fear. My only episode is I like to, when I make something, I like it to make it look good. And when I make something, I know that most of the time I have to make it out of junk. And if I need it to be precision to have the best efficiency possible, then I would like to have somebody who had the skill set to either run a precision milling machine or precision equipment to do it the right way. So where,
remember the Stirling engines I made out of the soup cans and junk?
Yeah, they worked.
Yeah, I wanted the Stirling engine so bad, and I'm looking at all these ones on the web that are machined and stuff like that, and I saw some people making them out of some kind of junk, and I said, you know what, I see so much that's stupid about all that. I had to prove it to myself that I could do it better.
Yeah, well, that's...
And I come to find out it wasn't, you know, the tin on the outside chamber not being insulated and not being separated where we keep the hot and cold. A lot of that heat transferred from the hot point to the cold side, so I needed more cooling. But I made the doggone thing work, and I learned something from it, and I'm glad.
Yeah.
You know, it's also made me money just for... a couple soup cans and videotaping what I did. So I'm happy with it.
Well, that's why I draw these
best ideas now. And I tell you what, my next Stirling engine is going to blow their minds.
That's why I draw these designs and put them out there, because if I can't get around to it for whatever reason, at least the idea is out there for somebody that if they want, they can try.
Yep, you learn from your mistakes. So if you want to learn, start making some doggone mistakes.
Well, look, I'm not saying that I can't make certain things. I'm saying that the quality of them ain't going to be the quality that I want out of these things to prove the efficiency the way that I'm saying it.
Hey, that Stirling engine fan of mine, when I put flywheels on it and I put that alcohol burner on it, that thing ran for 2 minutes, 2 minutes and what, 21 seconds on the stored energy.
Well, you did a good job.
I'd say it did pretty well.
You did a good job. But nonetheless, all these ideas that I keep putting out there aren't the only ideas that I'm working with. I work with what I have to work with, and when I don't have what I work with and I see an idea that's worthy of taking even further, I offer it to everybody else out there so that they can run with it if they so choose to do so. Now, when the opportunity comes about where I got the resources necessary to make what it is that I want to make, I'll replicate them myself. So I may be the last one in line to replicate my own idea, but no, it doesn't matter.
You know what? If I went down to the drag strip with something that looked like a bunch of hot water heaters and junk that I picked up on the side of the road, and I won the race, it'd be one heck of a conversation piece. And above that, it would compliment me.
Sure.
I would be thoroughly... I don't care what it looks like. It could look like a... crumpled up piece of aluminum foil with wheels that smokes and kills all the mosquitoes for 5 miles around, and I'd be happy as a... Well, I can't say that.
Well,
but I'm happy.
Nonetheless, to each his own. I'm just trying to say to the people out there, for those folks that like to say all we do is talk about it, there's diagrams put out there, ideas out there, and if and I don't get around to it before you do, and you get it, and basically it works, and then you turn around and sell it and get rich off it, more power to you. I don't care. I'm not looking to get rich here on the Mad Science Show. I'm not looking to get famous here on the Mad Science Show. I'm looking to put ideas out there because somebody at some point in time convinced me that there was a need in alternative energy. There was a need in clean, renewable power sources. That there was a need to save the planet. And so I'm doing my part, even if my part is just to talk about it or to give you diagrams of ideas. These are my thoughts. These are my views and opinions and science and everything that I've learned. I'm putting it on the table for you, and what you do with it is up to you. If you don't do anything with it, if you don't share the links, you don't pass them around, and nobody ever tries it, then it's just a nifty little drawing and an idea that maybe someday down the line somebody will or will not use. It's that simple.
You know what my greatest reward for the ceiling fan wind turbine was?
No.
Some little black kid down there in Cape Town, in some one of the little small villages outside of Cape Town, South Africa, wanted my email, and what he sent me was pictures of these planks of rotted wood for a prop held on there by baling wire, and thanking me and telling me that he walked 20 miles to the town to learn this from me, from a computer in the library, remembered what he could, went back and utilized it, and showed me pictures of this thing, which was horrid looking. And you know what? To me, that's my favorite doggone ceiling fan wind turbine. It was the first electricity in his village. And you know what? The thing is, he went back, he had contacted me after he made this thing, to get my email address. Then he borrowed a camera, took pictures. He walked back to town and sent me this stuff.
And you know he had to walk 20 miles back. This kid thought enough of what I did and what and being the first electricity in his neighborhood to walk that far to thank me.
Well, there you go.
I had tears in my eyes. And he sent me pictures.
There you go, man. See, that's it.
That is the biggest doggone reward. And you know what? Looking at that thing, I says, it spins, it works. I think it was great.
The whole point in all of this right here is that the ideas are on the table. If you want to use them, there they are. Mad science is about the whole entire frustration of knowing that we got the answers and seeing the world not take advantage of those solutions and actually making things happen. That's it. It's as simple as that.
I even remember the guy's name because of that. Yep.
Yep.
His name was... His sister's name was Mamie, and his name was Boubacar. And he actually wrote me in the language of Wolof as well. And he said, Nanga Dafe, which means what's happened. And that's how he opened up.
Yep.
And I had to translate. So, yeah, I mean...
All right.
He left me a lasting memory for life with his efforts.
All right, so let's start wrapping.
He didn't worry about putting a nick in the wood, did he?
Let's start wrapping this up here. So, basically, the ideas are there, and if you choose to utilize them, then you know we can make things happen. I'm going to put another drawing out there, the one that I talked about with the light bulb and the deal to transfer that heat energy. All of these ideas and anomalies and basic science and laws of physics put together in a proper order could literally give the world what they said they wanted, which is free electricity. And so with that said, the Mad Science Show is going to continue to produce even an idea that may or may not function like it's supposed to. It's just a thought. You take that thought and you run with it, you troubleshoot it, you do something with it, or you don't. It's that easy. I don't know what more to say other than that, man.
If you don't, you'll be sorry. If you do, you'll be glad.
Yep.
That's it. Because then you'll get hooked.
as far as myself, I have a mechanical mind that sees things and how they function and explain it in a mechanical sense, such as electricity and water pressure are like pretty much one and the same. They both, with the laws of physics and basic science, they both function in the same manner. You know, in certain electronics, you have switches and valves and things that... slow them up, speed them up, or resistance, or whatever, pressure, raise or lower the pressure, turn pressure, things on and off.
Potential difference.
Yep. And it has storage capability. You can pressurize tanks, and other anomalies occur when you pressurize things. If you compress air, it gets hot. You can't compress a liquid, so you end up with hydraulics, which when you force it in one direction, it's going to force it out the other, and it has a lot of strength since it can't be compressed. So you can use water to lift heavy objects that you couldn't otherwise move by yourself, which is the same concept of leverage and a fulcrum point and all that kind of stuff. I paid attention in basic science. My skill set isn't in actually manufacturing things. I can put things together using junk because I have an understanding of how I want it to work. But if it doesn't work exactly like I want to work because it ain't precision, sometimes I find myself getting frustrated because, you know, I'm building this with junk when I know that if I had access to some folks that had the talents and skills to do welding and milling, that we could build precision devices that would work. In the meantime, when I have the opportunity, I'll produce a junk version of it, and hopefully somebody will take that junk version of it and expand on it instead of criticizing it, or, you know, not even trying the idea. Like this diagram of either one of any one of these diagrams, and even future ones that I push up there for people to take a look at. You know, if you take the idea and you look at it just a picture, and all you can say is, well, you know, I see a problem here. Okay, well, you see a problem there. What is your solution to resolve that problem? Put your solution on that piece of paper and make it better.
Yeah, I remember you telling people, steal my idea. Just
steal it. Go out and get rich off of it.
Steal it. Go for it. Just do it. If you ain't going to do nothing with it, don't even look at it.
That's the whole point. Why even click on the picture if the only energy you're going to put into it is trying to figure out a way to say that, nope, it won't work because of this?
I'd have been much happier if BP Oil would have stole my idea instead of giving me $1 million or whatever they had for their stupid reward if they just did it.
Let me challenge you, Muddy.
I don't care if somebody got rich off it. As long as they got that oil out of the water and stopped killing the life.
Muddy, let me challenge you.
I'm sorry, was I getting mad again?
Maybe.
Go ahead, let me
challenge you, Muddy. And I'll challenge anybody out there with the same exact challenge. Take any of these designs. Don't matter what it is, whether it be the Peltier in the energy transfer system or the pulse motor idea, build the doggone thing. Take the diagram and build it and put it out there for everybody to see. And I guarantee you, if you prove me wrong on this concept, but just for the purpose that you even took the time to make it, I will thumb that video up and I will share that video, because somebody actually took the time to tell me why this would not work, and they showed me with an actual working device or non-working device. I'll thumb that video up because I don't care to be proven wrong. What I care is that somebody took the time to actually try it before they denied it.
Yeah, the ceiling fan wind turbine. Do you know how many people tried to claim that as their own invention and all that stuff? You know what? I got the joy out of just watching it become a fad. I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Well, I'm challenging you.
I know what you're saying.
I'm challenging you to take the one you think is going to be the cheapest. Take that Peltier element one idea there and build it. Try it out. And if it's said to be inefficient and it has all these losses, and you explain, you know, to the best of your ability what you can do to improve on it, or you know, that even if you, no matter what you do, it will fail, then I'll thumb that video up. Even though it's telling me that I'm wrong, I'll thumb it up. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Try it. Anybody out there, try any of these ideas and then come back to me and tell me I was wrong about a concept.
And if you try it, you'll be happy too.
No.
You might even be happier than that 13-year-old pimple-faced geek that got him a hot girlfriend.
See how many Peltier elements you can put on it sandwiched in between two water-cooled heat sinks. And see how many Peltier elements in a row that you can energize the Seebeck effect and get actual electricity off of other Peltier elements. All right? At some point, if you get enough of these that are able to, the one side, that energy heats and you leave it on long enough, that energy heats and cools both sides of that, and the entire piece of heat sink is finally all the same temperature. One side's hot and one side's cold, and your storage units are the same. And you take the power off of that, it may take you 4 hours to get it up to operating temperature. But once you get it up to operating temperature, how long will each one of those Peltier elements produce electricity using the Seebeck effect in reverse once that thing's up to temperature?
That's right.
That's what I've been trying to say. So anyway, folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Once again, this is what we do here. If you like what you've heard on this radio show, share the podcast with you. This one here, I'm going to basically name Pulse Motors and More. So when you go to look at the podcast, just look for Pulse Motors and More, and you go have that podcast. And you can download that podcast, and you can take anything that I said and make videos of it, and you can mock and ridicule if you like, or you can prove me where I'm wrong. But the mere fact that you're out there and you're at least trying to explain why it is that this won't work, and you actually use your explanation not just with the words that you got from the book, but you're actually built a device to show why it won't work and possible solutions to resolve why it won't work, I will come over and thumb up any fair replication of any idea that I put out there, even if it's trying to prove me wrong. There you go. That's the best I can do for the world.
It doesn't take any brain energy or intelligence to troll or shoot somebody down. But if you want, it does take a little bit of brain energy for constructive criticism.
Yep.
Don't criticize. Constructively criticize. When you constructively criticize, you're thinking about how to make it work.
Yep, when you show,
or complimenting them on the work that they did and telling them what they did right and suggesting what might help it. That you're, the constructive criticism is to help.
Yep, and one,
go out there and you use that constructive criticism even by trying to prove them wrong or whatever, then you're doing right because you're using brain power.
Yep.
If you want to be a dummy, go out there and be a troll.
And when
but
you
don't do it with us.
When you do that, you might be surprised that I might come back and say, well, what if you put this with that? Would that make a difference? You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Now instead of us criticizing one another and thinking each of us know more than the other, we're actually utilizing our brains to work together to find a solution to all the problems out there that exist in the alternative energy community, and that's what it's been about all along. So with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. You got anything last to say, Muddy?
Yeah, if you thumb a video down without a comment, you're showing your stupidity, because that's not constructive criticism.
Yep.
If you want to thumb the video down, try to make a suggestion.
Yep.
Yeah, be part of the help, not the hurt.
And don't just sit there and try to tell why it can't be done. Go through the process of actually building something and doing a hands-on experiment and measurements and all that to prove your case, and maybe we'll find a solution to whatever problem that you found.
Get rid of the fear and just do it, Doug. You'll be glad.
All right. Well, take care, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, share it on your social media networks and all that kind of stuff. That's how.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.